Hello and welcome to the Healthy Debate Show on UK Health Radio. I'm Belinda Walia and this is the space where we talk honestly about what it really takes to stay emotionally and mentally well in today's world. Whether you're navigating personal relationships, professional pressures, or just trying to keep up, this show is for you. Today's guest is someone many of you will remember for his powerful presence on the cricket field, but it's the journey off the pitch, the inner work, the advocacy, and the transformation that we're going to explore today. Robin Uthappa is a former international cricketer who represented India in both one-day innings and T20s, and was part of the team that lifted the T20 World Cup in 2007. He's been a star performer in the India Premier League, a fan favourite, and one of the most expressive, heartfelt players in the game. But beyond the stats and the stadiums, Robin is now an advocate for men's mental health, a transformation coach, and a voice for vulnerability, particularly in spaces where strength is often misdefined. His work today focuses on helping others find clarity, emotional balance, and purpose. Robin, it's such a pleasure to have you with us today. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Doc. Hope you're doing well.
I'm doing great, thank you. And before we dive into your coaching and advocacy, I want to go back to the beginning, because for so many athletes, the mental health journey starts long before the world is watching. So tell us, Robin, a little more about your personal journey. I mean, you've spoken openly about struggling with your mental health during your playing career. When did you first start to recognize that something needed attention beneath the surface?
Oh, I didn't recognize it, to be very honest. And something drastic had to happen before which I realized that something was wrong, you know. So I did not recognize that something was wrong with me. It was at the point where I almost tried to commit suicide is when I realized, oh my God, there's something wrong with me. I was that unaware of my own mental well-being at that point in time. It was in South Africa in 2009 when the IPL was happening there, the second year of the IPL. Yeah. I just moved teams, and in fact, I moved teams. I was transferred from one team to the other, and I wasn't happy about being transferred. But there were also a lot of other underlying stuff that I was going through. And I think it all came to a head in South Africa. And I was going through this whole phase of I was probably going through imposter syndrome at that point in time, where I felt like I belonged to another team, but I was representing another team. Mm-hmm. And just really didn't enjoy that feeling, and over everything else that I was actually going through, and the stress and pressures of the game. I just happened where I found myself sitting on the windowsill of my room, which was on the 23rd floor, and I'm actually scared of heights, or I used to be scared of heights, and I was just looking down, and I said, "Oh, I could just jump off, and all the pain would end." And it was more of a subconscious thought than a conscious one, and at that point, it felt like I almost regained consciousness, where I was just leaning forward, and then I just suddenly it hit me that I'm scared of heights, and I kind of threw myself back into the room, and immediately called my mom up, and I asked my family to come and spend some time with me in South Africa, because I just told her that something's wrong with me, I don't know what. And that was my first experience that something was wrong with me at that point in time.
Yes. And I really appreciate your vulnerability in sharing that moment that you've described. It's terrifying. It shows just how far someone can go without even realizing they're in crisis. And also it's powerful that you did realize. And it's often, I would say it's often only when a thought like that breaks through the noise that the mind recognizes it's in danger. And I'm glad that your fear of heights, it really actually saved you, because it jolted you back and gave you a moment to act, because that call you made could well have been the turning point that kept you here. And you know, again, I really appreciate what you're sharing. It speaks volumes, and it's also being, it's building that awareness. And it's nice to know that you had that support network. And so often I feel that athletes are seen as mentally tough by default, but that's not always the reality, as we've just heard. So what did emotional strength look like for you during those high pressure moments in international cricket?
I don't think the pressures really kind of got to me. I always looked at it as a privilege, to be very honest. The fact that I was representing my country at the highest stage, I considered it an honor and a privilege. And it was always about going out there and doing the best that I could do. So I think the game in that sense was a little bit of an escape for me from my own realities. Because the intensity is so high, you tend to put everything else in the back burner, so to speak. And I think that's also one of the reasons why, you know, it went unnoticed for a really long time. My mental health went unnoticed for a long time.
Yes, no, I can understand that. And again, thank you for sharing. And that makes complete sense. When the stage is so big and the stakes are so high, it's easy for the focus to stay on performance while the personal struggles stay hidden. And using the game as an escape can feel like a lifeline, but it can also mask what's really going on inside. And you played in front of massive crowds, faced huge expectations, and lived under the spotlight. How did that level of visibility impact your sense of self when things weren't going well?
I think the two things were quite separate for me, Doc. I think when I was playing, it was my job, it was what I needed to do for my country, and any team that I was playing for, whether it's franchise cricket or state cricket, or you know, any other tournament that I was playing, it felt like, okay, this is my responsibility. I need to fulfill these responsibilities. It doesn't matter what I'm going through emotionally. So I would kind of shut that out whilst I was playing. And the game actually helped me shut it out, to be very honest. From that place, it just kind of helped me, in a sense, navigate through the through those phases a little bit, not easier, but a little bit unaware in that sense, right? Mm-hmm. And it's one of the things I try and kind of reiterate to all the clients and coaches I'm working with. You know, even if you are the self-awareness part, mm-hmm. right? And not just about physical self-awareness but just more emotional self-awareness. You know, where are you at? You know, how do you feel? Even with the things that you do, that you consider a job, a responsibility, how do you feel about those aspects? And those are the finer things that can go amiss in the rigmaroles of life.
Yes. And it's that separation you described earlier in something many high performers can relate to, the compartmentalization, or compartmentalizing so deeply that the emotional pain gets locked away during the job. And it's a survival mechanism, isn't it? But it can also delay recognizing and addressing what's really going on. And the fact that you now share this insight with your clients and coaches is powerful, because it gives them permission to see that shutting things out might help in the short term. But true resilience, I think, comes from facing and working through those emotions, not just shelving them, But as you know, Robin, there's many people, especially men, who are often taught to power through pain. Why do you think it's still so difficult for men, especially in sport, to talk openly about mental and emotional struggles?
Oh, I don't think it's especially in sport. I think it's just especially in men, to be very honest.
Yes, you're right. You're right.
Well, I think it's in fact an incredible question, and one that very few people ask, actually. So thank you for asking that question. I have, this is how I've understood it, Doc. I think we as men aren't taught to process our emotions when we are kids. You know, we're always asked to man up. You know, you're a boy, don't cry. You know, we're always asked to curtail and curb our emotions. And we're not taught how to. And we're not taught how to deal with our own emotions. And because we're not taught how to deal with our emotions, we don't know how to process them. And because we don't know how to process them, we don't know how to articulate them. And that's when I came to the realization that parenthood is such a huge responsibility, where you're not just, you know, raising a child, you're stewarding them through, you know, the unique dance of the divine masculine and feminine energies that exist within each human being. You know, yeah. in the Hindu faith, they call it, it's a part of the Shiva Shakti. It's called the Ardha Narishwara, and that's the existence of both masculine and feminine energies that exist within each human being. And we as boys aren't taught how to process our emotions. We're not given room for it. Forget taught how to process it. We're not given room for it. And so we take that part of us into every aspect of our lives, into our professional lives, into our personal lives, into our relationships, both romantic and professional, personal relationships, friendships. And that's why, in a sense, I think men kind of find a tribe among men, because we're a group of people who are all kind of suffering the same ailment, so to speak. And that's why, even within a group, even if you can't articulate it, there is a sense of belonging that comes there that men crave for along the way, which is essentially, you know, the thing that I'm actually doing right now. I have a company called True. It's a life coaching, performance coaching, and mental health, and men's mental health and well-being, and modern masculinity coaching company. And we at True focus on helping, empowering men with obviously their mental health, because there are very few avenues for men to address their mental health in the world right now.
Yeah.
And we help them, we empower them with information as to how to go process their emotions and navigate through life with intention and purpose, while getting clarity about who they are individually as a person, discovering their purpose in life, and living life based on their morality, and based on their morality, the values and principles by which they want to live their lives. Mm-hmm. We help them navigate through that and help them reach clarity.
And that's really profound and beautiful. And going back to what you said earlier, you've touched on something so fundamental here when you spoke about the generational conditioning that tells boys to suppress emotions. Not only stifles their ability to process them, but shapes the way they actually relate to themselves and others for the rest of their lives. And that man up, I've heard that comment so many times in various cultures. It robs men of emotional literacy, I think, leaving many to search for belonging in places where vulnerability still feels unsafe. And what you're doing at ATRU is deeply needed. I think creating that space where men, as I'm sure as well as women, can really learn to name, understand, and integrate their emotions without fear or judgment. And in many ways, you're helping rewrite the script for modern masculinity so that strength and sensitivity are coexist. And I think that's such a wonderful thing to do. And I'm sure so many people will gain so much from that. But what I really want to know, as an advocate now for men's mental health, what kind of response have you received from both men and women?
Oh, incredible responses, actually, to be very honest, especially from the women. Because unfortunately, because of circumstances, they are on the receiving end of it, right? And a lot gets unaddressed in that process, especially in relationships, in long-term relationships, in marriages, and they all talk about how much their husband needs it or their partner needs it, you know, and how there's no avenue for them to have a safe space to be vulnerable, and to figure themselves self out. And which, in a sense, is, you know, what we at ATRU live for. We want to be able, we are creating safe spaces for men to be vulnerable and help them process their emotions and help them articulate these emotions and help them gain clarity with the things that they need clarity with. And we believe that, and that's one of the main, and that's why I said that we at ATRU, we primarily focus on men's mental health. Mm-hmm. Simply because we believe we'll be able to impact larger society over a period of time through this work. Because when men understand how to process their emotions and articulate said emotions and reach to a place of clarity and are living life with intention and purpose, then they take that part of themselves into their relationships, their professional life, their goals, their purpose, and life, in a sense, becomes more streamlined. It becomes more clear in that sense. And it's not like you won't face challenges, but when the challenges do come up, they will be able to navigate through them and not around them, you know?
Yeah.
And so we believe that they will be able to father children better. They will be able to create the safe space for their kids to be able to express their emotions, process them, articulate them, and help them become the best versions of themselves, right? And today, as a parent, it's something we address with our son. You know, when he's going through an emotional upheaval, we don't ask him to suppress it. We ask him to go through it. You know, we ask him to cry it out. And then once he's done crying, then we sit down, we have a chat about it. We ask him what he felt, and what he would do instead in a situation like that, what he would like to do, how he would like to address it, and help him understand the emotions that he is feeling and experiencing at that point in time. And it develops a much more clearer, self-aware and confident individual when one does that.
And that's beautiful. And you're absolutely right. I think giving men that space, children then have that space to be vulnerable too. And that's a beautiful thing. And it's wonderful to hear that you're actually demonstrating this to your own child, to your own son. And it's about equipping children, young boys and even men, to move through life with that resilience rather than avoidance, but also with that vulnerability, and to be open and to be able to feel that it's okay to have those moments where you are vulnerable and crying. I think that's really special. Thank you so much so far, Robin. This has been such a powerful conversation so far. We're going to take a short break, for a message from our sponsors here on UK Health Radio.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to the Healthy Debate Show on UK Health Radio. I'm Belinda Walia and I'm here with the amazing Robin Uthumpa, former cricketer, transformation life coach and passionate advocate for mental health. Let's talk about transition. I think I would, and I'm sure our listeners will be very keen to know that with this transition that you've had, leaving, you've not fully left. I know that you're still very much involved in the sport, but leaving professional sport can be an emotional roller coaster for many. And what was it like for you stepping away from cricket? And as I mentioned, I know you haven't fully, but how did it affect your mental well-being?
It was certainly, I wouldn't say challenging, but it was, well, for a lack of a better term, let's just call it challenging then. You know, when you stop playing professional sport, you have to step away from the limelight. And when you're doing that, you're stepping away from something that has brought you significance and relevance from a very young age, you know. And as an athlete, you spend your entire childhood making sacrifices for hopefully a career at international sport, at professional sport. So when you do step away from it, there is a large hole that is left there, a vacuum of space that exists, that is quite existential. And to navigate through that can certainly be challenging if you're unaware, and if you're not intentional with it, it can catch up with you. For me, I was consciously very intentional with my life. So for me, my transition from playing professional cricket to moving to what we do today at TRU was a little easier. I have to say, as a man also, that a married man who's got a wife and a family, it also has a huge impact on your provision and what you can provide, because your main source of income is it's almost like it's cut off, right? Yeah. It's sport is what put food on the table for me, for my family. So I've had to plan my finances in such a way that even if I'm without a job for a certain period of time, that my family can sustain itself. And so for me, because I was intentional with it, it was relatively easier, but not without its challenges. Because life in that sense is uncertain, right? It always throws you a curveball every now and then. And so when I finished playing cricket in India, when we moved to Dubai as a family, I moved in the back of a three-year deal that I had with a team that I was representing in a league that happens in Dubai. So after the first year, and so that gave me the comfort and the cushion, was what I believed, to be able to provide for my family. So what happened with that was, 6 months after the first season, despite doing well, they pulled the contract. And suddenly I had to go and figure out how I'm going to provide for my family post that first year, which left me, you know, not in a dark place, but in a place of discomfort. But I think through the challenges that I've been through in life, I was able to shift the perception of that and perceived it more of an opportunity. So I quickly moved into a learning space and started perceiving and looking at what are my potential solutions and how do I address those, how do I address this issue that is, if goes unaddressed, can be an existential issue for our family. And then so went through a period of about 18 months of relatively deep discomfort. But in that phase, I was able to learn, grow, and discover different sides of me. I always knew I wanted to help people because I recognized my purpose as being able to add value to people. So it became almost like a natural progression that that happened to me. Because when I finished playing cricket, I was very grateful to God that I was able to pursue my passion to put food on the table. So I knew that the next thing I wanted to do has to be related to my purpose in life. And at the time, whilst I was playing cricket, I thought maybe I'll become a cricket coach, a batting coach, because of my journey with batting and having been through multiple transformations with my technique in batting. But I never really felt peace with that, because I felt like my calling was a lot deeper and a lot larger, because I could coach batters and cricketers, but that would leave me serving people, you know, a very small, a very small number of people, and I felt like my calling was a lot larger. So when I went through this space of discomfort whilst being in Dubai, I kind of discovered, my wife is a life coach, by the way. My wife is she's a life coach, she's a hypnotherapist, and she's been one for an NLP practitioner as well for the last decade, a little more than a decade now. So oftentimes she and I would talk about how we would both become life coaches. And so I knew that that was always going to be a part of my life, but I honestly didn't think it would happen so quickly. I thought it probably happened after my 50s. But it kind of felt like a natural progression for me. And then I jumped straight into it. And, here I am a couple of years later, certified life coach, certified master, NLP master practitioner, an executive coach, a performance coach, and all of this stuff that's just happened so organically, which again, I'm very grateful for. And we're still at a very nascent stage of our business where we're building, we're growing right now. But the intention is to serve and serve not just, communities, but maybe, larger society as a whole, maybe in humanity. We believe that over a period of 25 years, our goal is to impact, hopefully a billion people.
That's amazing. And the shift that you described earlier from seeing an abrupt loss as a threat to viewing it as an opportunity is a huge marker of emotional growth. Now, Robin, you described so well the transition from professional cricketing to now life coach. You now work as that life transformation coach, helping others build confidence and clarity. What does transformation mean to you, and how do you guide people through it?
I honestly believe transformation and evolution is something you can't escape. So I believe that if you don't evolve, then after a point you stagnate, and then after a point you devolve. And so I think evolution is a part and parcel of life, but I genuinely believe that if you're intentional with it, you will discover sides of yourself that you never knew existed within yourself. Again, there is a spiritual context to everything that I do, and everything that I help people with. And so I believe that evolution is something one can't escape. And that's why awareness is such an important aspect of everything that I do, and all the clients that I work with, because without self-awareness, you will end up losing yourself. But with self-awareness, you can not only hold yourself in good stead, you can become the best version of yourself and keep evolving that to different levels.
Yes, absolutely. And I'm very much with you on that whole idea and aspect of self-awareness. I think self-awareness is key. If you don't understand yourself well enough, or you don't have that healthy self-relationship, you can't expect others to develop that healthy relationship with you either. And I think you've captured such a universal truth about growth. It's not optional, I don't think. It's inevitable, but without awareness, it can take you in directions you never intended. The way you link intentional evolution with self-awareness is key, because transformation without consciousness can feel chaotic, and while transformation with awareness becomes empowering. And I also, usually what I do, Robin, with that, I say, okay, if you are self-aware, you've also got to be self-accepting, and accepting the good, the bad, the ugly aspects of self, because that's really important, that you accept all of what you've been through, who you are and what you're about. And only then, once you have that self-awareness, that self-acceptance, can you then grow with that self-compassion. So I think
it's absolutely true. That is step two. Step one is self-awareness. Step two is self-acceptance and self-love.
Yeah, definitely. And you've also trained in NLP and spoken about the importance of rewiring thought patterns. How has that kind of inner work changed your relationship with yourself?
Oh, it's something that I experienced very young. I worked with an NLP practitioner when I was 20, 21. So about 20 years ago. 20 years ago, yeah. I must have been 20 when I worked with an NLP practitioner. He helped me rewire a very bad memory on the cricket field. And so I've always known the significance of it. And so for me, again, like I said, everything just felt like a natural progression. So when I finished life coaching, my life coaching certification, it just felt like, okay, this is the next thing I need to do, you know, because I saw the impact of it and how when I was able to use that on myself after a certain point during my playing days, I knew that it's something I wanted to learn professionally. And keep it as a tool through which I may be able to serve people as well.
Yes, and let's touch on identity. After years of being Robin the cricketer, how did you begin building a new identity beyond the game? Because now this is what we're doing today, even just exposing Robin as the life coach, the transformational coach, one that runs an organization called True. How has it been for you with the identity of that?
Well, I'm still building it, aren't I? Am I building it? By doing podcasts like these. And,
that's great.
Having conversations about this stuff. I'm not someone who's, found it difficult to deal with attention or lack thereof of it. I've always been happy with the attention I get, but it hasn't been a priority in my life. So when I did step away from the game professionally, again, because of the things that I've been through, I navigate through life with a lot of self-awareness. So I knew that I knew of the things that I could perhaps experience. And so because that awareness was there, it didn't really affect me badly at all. And so that's not something that bothers me very much. I still continue to get the attention because we as Indian cricketers are so loved all around the world.
Yes.
It's something that I've dealt with positively, and I don't suffer from it, to be honest.
And that's wonderful to hear. And earlier on, you shared that faith and spirituality are important in your life. How do they support your mental health and the way you make decisions today?
To be very honest, in the worst days of my depression and being suicidal, it kept me alive. Kept me alive to the extent that I became, hyper-religious, so to speak, because I saw how it kept me alive. But to be very honest, in hindsight, I think it's just faith, whether it's faith in a universal power, it's faith in yourself, whether it's faith in a particular God, it doesn't matter. Just having faith is very, very important.
Yeah.
And faith that everything is will work out, and you experience what you experience because it grows you. And I'm someone who believes that growth never happens inside of the comfort zone. You can only experience growth outside of it. And you got to get comfortable being uncomfortable, you know, and to even know that it's okay to not be okay, because that not okay disappears once you get comfortable with the fact of not being okay, and you grow into that space, and suddenly that space of not being okay is absolutely fine, because you've evolved into that space and you've grown into that space, and you've become wholer as a soul.
Yes, and sharing such wise words with us, with the audience, I'm sure the listeners will really appreciate the concept of framing challenges as growth opportunities, even when they're deeply uncomfortable, transforms pain into purpose. And I'm sure everybody would love that. And family and fatherhood bring a whole different layer of that growth, I'm sure. But what have you learned about emotional expression through being a dad and a husband?
Oh, that's a great question again. To be very honest, you know, when my first kid was born, I experienced something that I'd never experienced in my life before. Because you know, when you give birth to a child, the child also gives birth to parents, right? And for me, I thought that feeling was something that I probably wouldn't experience differently. But when we had our second child, when Trinity came along, it was a similar feeling, but completely different altogether at the same time. And I think I, again, with parenthood, being a father, I kind of navigate it as intentionally as possible. I don't seek perfection. I seek excellence, and I seek to give them my best. And one of the things I keep asking myself is, am I giving myself the best opportunity to give them the best that I can, mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually? Am I giving my best?
Yeah.
And I do believe that if you're giving your best, that's the most you can do. And if you're intentional with that, you're doing what very few parents in the world actually do.
And that's such a beautiful way to see parenthood. Thank you. It's wonderful and so inspiring listening to you, Robin. But let's pause for a moment for another quick break and word from our sponsors here on UK Health Radio.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
Welcome back to the Healthy Debate Show on UK Health Radio. I'm Belinda Walia, and I'm joined by the incredible Robin Northumba as we begin the final part of our conversation, focusing on the inner tools, daily rhythms, and guiding wisdom that support his journey. Welcome back, Robin.
Thank you, Doc.
So, are there any daily rituals or grounding practices that help you stay centered mentally, physically, or spiritually? I know you shared earlier that you have turned to faith often, but is there something else that you can share with the listeners, please?
Yeah, for sure. As in, I offer gratitude every day. I spend some time in Djokovic calls intentional breathing.
Mm.
So some time in meditation as well, a little bit. And I do keep myself active, so I play some sport or the other. Right now, I've been bitten by the paddle bug. So I absolutely adore the sport of paddle. So I've been playing a bunch of that. So that keeps me healthy as well. And I find that it's important to have an area of expression, whether it's a sport, whether it's a hobby, something that keeps you, keeps your relationship within yourself pristine. So I think a practice that is your own, you know, outside of your responsibilities for your family, you need to have. And when you have that practice, that certainly keeps you centered. It could be prayers, it could be meditation, it could be playing a sport, it could be, you know, reading a book even. Anything that is healthy, that evolves you, is something that I would, you know, highly recommend.
Thank you for sharing that. And what's one piece of advice or wisdom you received about mental well-being or resilience that has really stayed with you?
Oh, I've landed on a few things in my journey. And I think one of them being is that the only way to balance in life is through imbalance. That's been one of my biggest learnings in this space, that you got to be able to sometimes overextend yourself, and that generally happens. Imagine you're sitting on a seesaw with a friend, right? The only way to get to balance, you go on one side and then you go on the other side, and then the both of you work together to find that middle ground where both of your feet are off the ground completely. And you're able to hold that space for some time. And then you go off balance again. And then you work on it and then you come back. And I think whether you're in a relationship or whether you're single, life is going to be like that. You will go off balance. So you will fall off the horse. That's going to happen. But getting back up on the horse and trying to find that balance again, that's the most important bit. And another thing that I've learned along the way is that the answers are all within. They are never without. They're never outside of you. They're always inside of you. They're always within. So if you're honest with yourself and if you are seeking answers, I believe that you will find it.
That's such a grounded way to view balance, not as a static state, but as something dynamic and constantly shifting. And I love how you've ended your sharing of something that could be really profound and stay with the audience. I mean, I absolutely agree. When you combine that inner truth with the understanding that balance is fluid, it creates a powerful mindset. And if you trust that answers are already within you, then those moments of imbalance become less threatening. And that's what most people say is their intuition. But Robin, it's been such a pleasure. Where can our listeners find you if they'd like to follow your work or wish to connect with you further?
They can reach me on my Instagram page at this point in time. It's called True by Robbie. T-R-U-E by Robbie, R-O-B-B-I-E. They can find me there and they can always reach out to me there. Enough contact details are shared there for them to reach out to me.
And that's wonderful. Robin, thank you so much for joining me today. Your openness and your insight have brought so much to this conversation. You've shown that masculinity and vulnerability aren't opposites, they're part of the same strength. And to everyone listening, thank you for being with us. If this episode reminded you of anything, I hope it's this: you don't have to carry it all alone. Real strength begins with honesty, with yourself and with others. With heartfelt gratitude, I'm Belinda Walia, and this is the Healthy Debate Show on UK Health Radio. Take care of yourself and take care of each other. To close today's show, I've chosen a song that reflects support, brotherhood and emotional connection. A beautiful reminder that you're never alone on this path. Here's a part of Brother Need to Breathe Feet by Gavin DeGraw.
Desert now is a cage.